Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen, and this is your daily dose of happy. We're so happy you decided to join us today. Louis D'Souza is joining me from London, the UK, and we are talking about a topic that he brought up last week. He brought up a couple topics last week. Louis, you've been kind of in topic heaven, coming up with all these different topics lately. This topic, not only did you come up with it, but it also inspired a listener to send in an email about the topic. So we got a lot.
Yeah, I'm keen to hear that.
It's going to be good. But before we get going, I want to take a moment to remind people what I've been saying the last few episodes, which is we are doing a special Thanksgiving here in the United States, Thanksgiving episode. Obviously, we don't record here on Thanksgiving Day, so I figured, well, why do we have to go without an episode that day? Why don't we create a Rampage of Gratitude episode? So people have been sending in their 3 to 5 or whatever gratitudes, things they're grateful for. All of our co-hosts are doing it. People from the listening audience are doing it. We even had a couple people who have been guests on the show expressing interest in sending it in. And I'm going to take all these and add in a bunch of my own and mix them all together and create this one long episode, Rampage of Gratitude. So it's a long way of saying, if you'd like to be a part of it, we would love to include you as well. And there is a special web page you can go to in order to do it. It will basically connect you into a website called, I think it's videoask.com. You don't have to know about that because our link will just take you there. It's just a way of recording your particular answer to the question of what are you grateful for as we head into the Thanksgiving holiday. So if you are interested in participating, and some of our listeners have already done so, then just go to loatoday.net/gratitude, and it will take you right to the spot. So participate, join in, and let's make this a really, really good Rampage of Gratitude episode for Thanksgiving Day. In the meantime, though, we have good things and bad things to talk about, Louis, because that's what the topic is, doing good versus doing bad. And I figured I would start off with the email from listener Deborah, if you are ready and interested. Sound good to you?
Yeah, let's do it. Hi, Deborah.
All right. So Deborah's actually one of our really, really regular listeners. She's been contributing a lot of questions and so forth via email, via the LOA Today app and so forth. And so I'm going to read through what she says here. Fairly lengthy, so bear with me. She says, which harms the world more, people who are doing good or people who are bad? Interesting, she says. Firstly, I would say that there are no good or bad people per se, just people doing good or bad things. Although this is also a question of interpretation, how would you define good or bad? In this instance, I would look towards the person's intentions as to whether they mean to harm or do good unto another. Now, from an Abrahamster perspective, she put that in quotes, I suppose you could say that you can only create in your own reality. And if you're seeing another in terms of lack and intending to do good by helping them, you are, in fact, taking away their power. You should hold them in your mind as whole and healthy and fulfilled and connected to source. In this regard, if you're wanting to, quote, do good, unquote, in what we could term a charitable way, seeing one as lesser than another in some way, we are in fact doing them a disservice by taking away their power, and so could be seen as doing them harm. If someone is doing bad and their intention is to harm, I guess ultimately the only person they are harming is themselves, as you can't create another's reality. But by focusing on negativity, they are doing themselves a great disservice. As Abraham might say, the effects of the actions of one who is very much not connected to source are meager and paltry compared to one who is. So I guess if the harmee were connected to source, the effects of the harmer's actions would bounce right off them. My understanding, she says, is that the best service you can be to others and to the world is to maintain your highest possible vibration, and that this in and of itself will be of major benefit to all. And then she has parenthetically, by the way, you mentioned people who are doing good and people that are bad. Don't know if this is just a question of semantics and you just met people trying to do good and people intending to do harm unto others, question mark. Love the discussion, she said. Some very helpful pointers. That was on last week's episode. Thank you both. My attention was very much caught by your opinion about not having an opinion. I can very much see how judging something as good or bad creates drama and problems, how important it is to be in acceptance of where we're currently at and not judge situations as bad. However, surely we all have opinions on things. This doesn't inherently mean that we label others or who don't share those opinions are wrong and can't be open or flexible. And then she clarifies by saying she doesn't listen live because she lives in the UK, gets up at 5 a.m. and listens to the podcast. So she says, I didn't directly help manifest the following, although if time is just a mental construct, maybe I did. But when you were talking about having opinions, I was thinking of the very subject you propose to talk about next week, vaccines. And we will take that up literally next week. So certainly, especially in this current situation, I can see that it's crucial not to be defined by your opinions or to try to persuade others to hold a different point of view, as I see how divisive and corrosive that would be. And we aren't defined by our opinions. They're ultimately just thought forms that come and go, but we all do have them. So do you mean that we shouldn't have attachment to our opinions, or that we shouldn't label things as good or bad, or that we shouldn't even hold an opinion, if that makes any sense? And then she concludes by saying, thank you both for such an inspiring, energizing, and interesting discussion. I love both of your enthusiasm for and love of discussing the law of attraction and helping others gain clarity. Ooh, are we back to the original question, she says? And she wanted to say sorry when I was so long, but yeah, a lot of stuff there. What do you think?
Well, let's start at the end.
Okay.
So when I'm saying no opinion, I've got lots of opinions about everything, but I don't expect you to agree with them, disagree with them, or not agree with them. And I don't hold my opinions for long, and I'm prepared to change them at the drop of a hat.
Which is useful when I have you as a co-host on the show, because that means I know that every episode is going to be different, and I like that.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, I'm always amused at these people that are worried about, you know, oh, Big Brother knows everything that I've ever done and all the rest of it. I say, who cares? Tomorrow I'm going to be such a different person. It doesn't matter what they found out about me yesterday. I'm going to be, you know, and especially if I know they're onto me, then I can really play the different card. And they would so much expect me to react this way, and I'm reacting that way. So who cares, you know? I'll be way
Do you realize how many algorithms you're messing up with that particular attitude? I mean, it's really
something. It's terrible. You know, somebody was saying to me, oh, you can't escape Big Brother. I said, I don't want to. I want to be in the limelight because that's the only place I can hide anymore. You can only hide in plain sight. So,
I love it.
So just to go back, Deborah, yes, you can have opinions. I have opinions of what I think is good for me at the moment. No problem with that. And I will follow that all the way until I get a better clarity. And then I'll move on to that, and I'll move on to that, and I'll move on to that. But I do not expect, want, or need anybody else to agree with it. That is incredibly empowering. You know, Walt, I was in South Africa, and I was on the beach. And if you're a white South African in those days, you were either a Christian or a waning Christian. So you were either leaving it or not very interested in Christianity, or you were a Christian. You know, you were brought up in Christianity, so you were a Christian. So these reborn Christian bumped into me on the seafront when I was walking with a friend of mine. And he said to me, is Jesus Christ your Lord and Savior? I said, no. And he said, what? Oh, so do you believe in Christ? I said, yeah, absolutely. He was a great prophet. And he said, yeah, but so you don't agree that Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior? I said, no, I don't. He said, okay, you're going to hell. I said, great, I love that place. It's a nice hot place, isn't it?
This is called messing with someone's mind, by the way.
You know, it was just my truth, you know. I wasn't even trying to mess with his mind. I was just trying to say to him that you've got your opinion. I'll let you keep it. But I've got mine, and I'm not going to let you change it at all. And if you don't back off, I can play many other games if I needed to, you know. you know, so the leader of his group came to him, tapped on his shoulder, and he said, leave that one alone. Sounds so funny.
That's one of the special people.
So the leader didn't even come to chat with me either. He decided that this one was to be left because, yes, you know, they've got their little niche and they can trap many people with that niche, but there's certain people that are way outside of it. And so the bottom line is, you know, as I was saying, when I go to Speaker's Corner, I love helping the Christians understand their belief better. I love helping the Muslims understand their belief better. I love helping the atheist understand what life's about better. So, you know, I want people to keep on, following whatever feels very, very good to them. And when it's not feeling so good, they're going to start changing. They're going to start looking elsewhere, and other things will influence them to a greater degree. That is a natural process of how it works. And so yeah, from an opinion point of view, the thing that I'm really getting at is I'm very, very flexible. There's certain things that are really kind of solidified in stone for me, and that's like the law of attraction. You know, it's one of those core beliefs which don't include any religion or anything. It is very, very simply down to the basics. What you put your mind on, you manifest. The law of attraction will take that vibration and amplify it. So you really get to that a point where there are certain things that, you know, as long as I live, I think I will still have an appreciation in the physical universe for the law of attraction. And there is some qualifications there. So, you know, the thing about opinion is, if it works for you and it works in every scenario, in every subject and every topic and every dimension of your life, then it is something that you can probably hold fairly clearly as an opinion. But again, you know, if somebody else comes up with a clearer definition or idea of what the law of attraction is or isn't, I'll be onto that in a split second. If it feels right and I want to go with it, then hey, the law of attraction will take more of a back seat. And this new philosophy will be integrated into me and I'll run with it. So the important aspect about opinions is really that, you know, understand what you know, where you're going, but don't need to pull, push, drag, cajole, manipulate other people to agree with it and to follow it. And so let's go to this good or bad thing. So the people that think they're doing good in the world are probably a lot of the people who are following different religions.
I would say that's true of many, sure.
Yeah. And if you look at one of the biggest things that have caused more wars in the world than anything else, it's religions. And if you break yes. religion down, what is it? Religion is one thing. Religion is a belief that you hold that you are generally more often than not, I would say, you're trying to get somebody else to agree with. Mm-hmm. And millions and millions and millions and millions of people have died in the name of I'm right and you're wrong. And you must agree with me.
Which is pretty odd, actually, because I found now, like you, I was raised in a Christian environment. And for me, I was most of my time associating with people of religious faith and so forth. I was trying to spend most of that time just trying to convince myself it was true. I didn't have any time to convince anybody else of it. So
you're probably in the boat, Walden. Many of us were. I would agree with that.
You know, the idea of trying to convince somebody else.
We weren't very successful, were we, Walden?
No, not really, no. What I heard when evangelizing was, it's like my eyes popped out of my head like, people really do that?
Yeah, I know. It was a horrendous concept to me in the beginning. People going to Africa and they spend time in little groups encouraging in many different ways other people to agree with what they believe. It's like, wow, they actually do this. And then I started to see why it grabbed hold. And it was an interesting thing for me. It grabbed hold because it was the lesser of the evil based on what they were previously believing. Oftentimes it was like, it's a little easier to believe that than it is to believe that. So, you know, it had quite a foothold, many of the religions there. But There is a huge surge on planet Earth at the moment because of the internet, because of media, because of knowledge, because of people like LOA Today's guys, that a lot of people are now choosing to follow their own path.
That's a pattern that's been going on for quite some time, I think. Yeah. But you're right, it's gotten a real surge since the internet.
Real surge at the moment. So, some of us call ourselves Abrahamsters, which is somebody who follows Abraham Hicks. I thought I'd clarify that in case somebody doesn't know what an Abrahamster is.
I will say that it does seem at times like we're running on a wheel. I just thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah, I've got that image in my head now. I can't get out.
It's my fault.
Yeah, it's your fault. So you've got the Abraham hamsters who are demanding or encouraging strongly that you don't treat them as religion belief. You don't have to tithe. You don't have to do anything. You can agree or disagree with them. They don't care. And then you've got a guru out of India at the moment who's become incredibly popular. He's number 20 in the most influential individuals in India. And he's got millions of volunteers worldwide. And what he says about the volunteers is quite amusing. He says, I can't hire them and I can't fire them.
Now that's annoying, I have to say.
And he also, you know, he also says, you know, I'm not a religion. I'm not a path, you know, do whatever you want. But you know, people are going to call me guru and there's nothing much I can do about it. And it's just the way it is.
And sympathetic to him, actually.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a huge amount of groups out there which you can kind of identify with, and you can, because you're not having to or forced to like you were, would be in Christianity or something. If you're Christian, you can't say you're a Muslim as well. You just can't do that. But here you can say I'm an Abraham hamster and I follow this and I follow that and I follow that and I follow that. And I really know what I believe and I'm following that too. And that's really where I'm going. So, there's a huge empowerment of the individual to know who he is and where they're going, which is great.
That is good. Yes. Let me just mention it. It's reflective of a few things that I think are important. The most important one of all, and this again ties back to what you mentioned a moment ago about how the internet has contributed to the surge in desire and in action to, you know, think for themselves and adopt their own beliefs and share the beliefs with others who are, you know, of similar mindsets and so forth. And that is, it has, I think, I don't want to say create because it's been there all along. It has reinforced the prevalent freedom that is our birthright, that is part of who we are as creatures and as creators of source energy. And it is a freedom that is not given by some outside authority. It's not a freedom that can be taken away. It's a freedom that is evolving and creating within our own minds. And so many of us are sharing that it just keeps increasing and exponentially. I think that's what I'm trying to get to. It's just like this ever increasing freedom. And I just think that's really cool. So I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I completely agree. Yeah. The other aspect we wanted to go on to was the bad guys.
Oh, yes.
Now, here we go. The bad guys have killed one or two people, stolen one or two things, and they're in prison, and that's it. Mm. So who's worse, the good guys or the bad guys? That's what I wanted to leave everybody to think about.
Yeah, that could take a lot more than a single show, I think, to talk about that one. Yeah.
Nah, I think you can just leave it at that. Which guys do you think have done more harm on this planet, the good guys or the bad guys?
Well, there is something to be said for just leaving it at that, which is I don't really want to spend a whole lot of time focusing on what I don't want.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Yeah.
So, all right.
About doing the extra episode. The extra episode is now off the table.
Exactly.
So forget what I said about that.
So what we start realizing, and this is a big topic, is that there is no good and evil.
Ooh.
Yeah. So there's perspective, as it says in Richard Bach Illusions, perspective, use it or lose it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an individual thing. You've got an individual perspective, because I promise you, and much as Walt and I are on the same page, you have a different perspective to me on many things.
Not the least of which is that I see an ocean behind you. You don't see that.
I see the planet behind you.
The planet, yes.
It's great. You know, I think that unique aspect of us each individuals having our own individual perspective is so delicious and visceral and enjoyable. But you need to get to that place of not needing anybody else to see my planet in the back of Walt or something else. You know, I don't need you to see that. I just want you to find your own path, and I'll encourage you and help you find your own path. And that is something I have infinite amount of enjoyment doing. So, you know, and I manifest those situations in an unprecedented amount of ways in my life all day, every day. Once you found your passion or some of your passions, because there'll often be more than one, you know, you just go for it and you find it. I'm going to have to hold my high 19s again. We'll do some ginseng. My voice is going a bit wonky. So, guys, I'm just holding my higher self here. I'm digging in a little bit where it's a little bit sore there, and that'll really help my voice. You'll notice it'll start going a bit deeper very shortly.
And for people who aren't seeing the video, he's grabbing his upper arms above the elbow near the shoulder.
Between the elbow and the shoulder, there's a little soft spot on the outside that you can dig your fingers in a little bit. When you feel a little bit of pain, you just hold it gently over it. You don't have to push or pull or do anything. You're working with energy here. And, you know, I can already feel my voice getting a little bit easier. So working with the energy of the body is just so nice once you start getting it. You know, anybody's coughing or got corona, I strongly recommend just holding these points here. It'll really help with that coughing. I think I had coronavirus back in January, and I had this feeling, because I'm incredibly aware of my body, and the feeling of this coughing kind of problem that I had was that it was alien. It was something I'd never experienced before in my life. And the word jumped out at me in so many ways, the word alien. What I meant by alien was very simply this, not from another planet, but from the point of view as I hadn't experienced it before. Mm-hmm. And holding these high 19s stopped that coughing and stopped that tremendous pain that comes with that coughing. You know, when you're coughing your lungs out and it's just horrendous. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not comfortable. Not comfortable at all. So let's get back to this idea of perspective, because obviously it's a different perspective on good and evil. But where I really wanted to go with it is it's also about preference. I've actually pretty much gotten away from talking about good and evil, unless I know I'm in a conversation with somebody who they just understand things that way. So I'll kind of revert to form, so to speak, and talk about things in terms of good or bad. But even then, I'm trying to do it within the context of what they consider good or bad, or at least what I understand about what they understand about good or bad, not because I'm trying to reinforce their idea, but just because I want to communicate in a way that they understand, and that's it. But for myself, I just think in terms of preference now. I don't think about things as being good or bad, you know, right or wrong. I think about, do I prefer or don't I prefer? And I can't say I'm 100% on that. Sometimes I do revert. Sometimes I kind of slip back a little bit.
You don't?
Not for very long.
I do. Sure?
I really do. Yeah.
You must be human.
Well, you know, how about that? But the perspective of preference, it just takes so much angst out of the whole question.
It does. And I've seen so many people have relief from that angst because of that understanding.
God, yes.
Infinite amount of relief and release. It's just so beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's relaxing.
Of course means that your higher self is agreeing with it and is saying you're heading in the right direction. Carry on in that direction.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I guess what I was trying to spit out when my mouth wasn't quite coming out with words was not only is it so relaxing, it's so damned easy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like I have to work at it. The only thing I ever have to work at is when I slip, and then I'm working at finding what's right or what's wrong. There's where the work comes in. And I'll do that for a bit, and I'll say, wait a minute, why am I working? Go back to the preference. It's so much easier. And then I go back to the preference. And when I think about the preference, then all of a sudden it becomes easier. And it also makes it easier to there are two kinds of criticism, I'll call it, for lack of a better term. That's one of those words that's a little bit funky because we use it in a couple different ways. But there's self-criticism and there's criticism of others. And I kind of come from the school of thought that says we are harshest on ourselves. We're most critical of ourselves. But by the same token, we can also be pretty critical of others. And the funny thing is, when I start thinking about people in terms of their preferences, I find I'm a lot less critical of them. And I'm a lot less critical of myself at the same time.
Mm.
Just because I'm not trying to put a label on them anymore. And I'm simply saying to myself, my favorite phrase to use is, they're doing the best they know how to do.
Exactly.
It just kind of takes all the sting and the angst and the frustration right out of the muscle, right out of the entire equation. It's really something.
The thing that really helps me, Walt, is appreciating that every individual has spent an entire life of building a philosophy of what they believe, and where they are at any moment in time is the pinnacle of that. And that needs a level of respect.
Yeah.
You know? And for you to go there and just bash it around is just not particularly helpful.
Well, you mentioned the book Illusions. That's not actually something that Richard does to Donald. He points out to him the one thing he's come there for his entire lifetime to learn. He points it out in 5 seconds and he does it dismissively.
It's very different when a student goes to a teacher and says, teach me something. Then all doors are opened for the teacher. And it's quite a different perspective to a random individual in the streets going up to somebody.
True.
And chatting to them. And, I love talking a little bit about, it could be a whole episode, I suppose, about the student-teacher relationship and how all that works, or the student-master relationship, or the student-guru relationship, or the school, whatever words you want to play with in your life. And if you think about it, when you allow your teacher, even at school, I had one English teacher, and she always tried to encourage me to, she saw something in me, you know, and I was very, very dismissive, and I'd say, what do you think of this poem, Louis? Indifferent, ma'am, you know. And I was very like that the whole time. But she really saw something and she really tried. And eventually I allowed her to mold me a bit. And once you get to that place where you say, okay, I'll allow you to mold me, the teacher has a lot more ability to use tools that it can't otherwise use because of invasion and all the rest of it. But once you agree to submit to the teaching, you know, test the teacher as much as you want, but after a certain point, if you allow them to teach you, they can really move forward fast and nicely and well, like Richard and Donald, you know.
Well, you give them permission is what you're doing. You're giving the teacher permission.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you give them permission, you're right. You're basically saying, I'm willing to cooperate in everything that you're going to send my way.
No matter how hard you hit me in the head, I'm going to say more.
Be very careful which teachers you pick.
You know, and some of us do like the teachers who have the stick, and some of us do love the teachers who have the love and lead from that perspective. And, you know, different people have different desires of different teachers, and they're different teachers. And then, you know, some like the mixture and blah, blah, blah. So you'll find yourself drawn to that teacher that has that mix that works with you.
Isn't it an interesting thing too? It is individual teachers we're talking about, but so often when we think back on situations where we're learning stuff, we don't talk in terms of a teacher teaching it to us. We talk about life teaching it to us, or God, or the universe, or, you know, we make it a broader, less specific entity than a specific teacher. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure why that happens. It's like we gave them the power and then we took it back. I'm not sure.
you know, sometimes you evolve past the teacher and then you need to leave them and move on to another one. And That happens quite often, sometimes more often than you'd believe. And the more often it happens, it's quite good because it means you're progressing and you can see your progress quite nicely and easily. You know, in martial arts, I learned this and I was fascinated the first time I heard it because I'd always heard of a master or teacher trying to hold a student. But in martial arts in China, the only time a teacher was truly happy is once the student surpassed them. Then did they feel like a success. And I was like, wow, I'd never really thought of that. That is cool. I want to work with that philosophy. You know, that agrees with me. And, I have helped people that have surpassed me and gone on to do incredible things, you know, and it's great. You know, I really feel good about that. And, you know, some people would maybe not feel good about that if depending on what level of ego they got. But, I often realize that a lot of people come into my life for very short periods of time just to get one or two lessons and go, and that's fine by me because I'm not particularly fond of the crowds. So, you know, I've got my family, I've got my own crowd and it's just beautiful. I love that. So that works very well with me. Okay. But to have, huge, you know, like this guru I was talking about, he has millions of people around the world following him. And he says, you think you've got responsibility of your family or few people you look after. I've got a responsibility for millions. So, you know, it's a very different deal to be able to get there. And, you know, I said to my mentor once, oh, I could become a pope. It's easy. It's no problem. She said, you really think you could become a pope? You can handle that level of power and responsibility? Do you really think so? And I had to look at it from another angle altogether. And, I started to realize that those individuals are quite interesting. They really are, who can handle that level of attention and power and responsibility.
I think that probably one thing that sets the really good ones apart, and I'm kind of in keeping in my own mind people who I find to be not only influential to my life, but positively so, you know, in a way that I really like, that feels good, that I prefer. and that is, such people are not only good teachers, they're also good students. Because to me, one of the most interesting phenomena in life is where the teacher becomes the student and the student becomes the teacher, where roles reverse. Because when that happens, what's really happening in my mind is that the two or more people, depending on how many we're talking about, are actually demonstrating their own flexibility. They're not married to being one thing only. I am the student for life or I am the teacher for life. They're saying, you know, I don't have all the answers. I have some. I'll share what I've gotten. I'm willing to hear what you got. That's flexibility. That's being willing to just go with whatever is coming my way and making the most out of it.
What I realized about being often a teacher is that I'm learning a lot of the time how to teach better. So I'm not necessarily learning my subject better, but I'm learning something else better. And that was fascinating to me, that it's not necessarily learning your own subject better, although you're learning to deliver it clearer. I often find I've got better ways of delivering the same message, but tweak it slightly and it just hits home that much better with different individuals at different time, and being flexible enough, not having too many opinions about where the person's at, but being flexible enough to, whenever they come up with something different or a different angle or the rest of it, just flow with it. You know, and not being stuck with, this is the way I normally do it with people, you know, the way salespeople usually do and fail miserably.
Yeah, right.
Here's your script, read it. You know, how many times have I had that telephone call? Can you stop reading the script and just talk to me, please?
Right, exactly. Otherwise it's click. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I know exactly what you mean. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, that also reminds me of one of the better passages from the book you mentioned, Illusions by Richard Bach, because he talks about the similarities and differences between students and teachers. He says, learning is remembering what you already know. Teaching is reminding others that they know it, and doing is demonstrating that you know it. And we are all learners, doers, and teachers. And when you look at it that way, then you begin to realize that the boundary about teaching and learning or being the student can blur pretty easily, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. It's perfectly okay. In fact, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
So let's get back to doing good and doing bad. I mean, we're so good at focusing on preferences and, you know, perspective and so forth. We almost forgot the topic. So we really got to get back to the topic.
I think the topic has been covered with everything we've been saying, really. I mean, you can really paint a broad stroke with good and bad, can't you? So, it covers many facets and aspects of our lives. You know, I used to be worried before I had children. How am I going to bring them up? Am I going to be a capable dad and all that absolute rubbish? You know, good dad, not a bad dad. And then you have a kid and you're just trying to clean the bum and get a dry nappy on. You've got no time to think about being good or bad or anything. You're just trying to get enough sleep to survive the next day of work. And,
right.
You know, it's being a good or bad dad doesn't come into it at all.
Not really. No.
Which is very, very funny. And then you start realizing that, hey, it's not my life. It's not my life to be a good dad or bad dad. They chose me, so they're going to have to suffer with what they got. I'll do the best I can, and that's it. Off I go. And then you start realizing that, ooh, I shouldn't even be teaching my child anything. Life's the teacher. Oh, my gosh. How does that work? Okay. Let life happen to them. Okay, that's one of the best things I can allow to do is let them deal with life. You know, I often encouraging my kids, disagree with me as much as you possibly can, you know, argue, fight your point, discuss, think of different ways, but don't agree with me, please. Unless you really are agreeing with me, you know, and then of course there is no disharmony. So there isn't any agreement or disagreement. It's just the same page. But, you know, I really don't need even specifically my family to agree or disagree with me. You know, they must just follow their own path. I'm always giving my daughter tons of responsibility, even from a young age. They were making their own sandwiches, climbing on the dishwasher up to the kitchen top and going and getting some bread or biscuit or something, or making themselves a sandwich or something. You know, I've always encouraged them, and you know, I haven't gone there and just belted at them and say, no, you shouldn't do that. I'm like, yeah, well done. Yeah, you got the stool and you pushed the chair from the lounge into the kitchen and stood on it and got something out of the fridge. Great for you, you know. And, you know, if I don't want them to eat anything, just don't bring it into the house is my rule.
A good rule.
Yeah.
Jeffrey asked a question in the live stream. He says, since good and bad are relative, isn't everything we do subject to how it is judged by others?
You can allow yourself to be affected about how others think about you, but I don't care too much about how others think about me because it doesn't feel good. Which means, you know, follow your own path, follow your own right and wrong, go with it, flow with it. And, you know, if other people want to enforce their right and wrong on you, the instant they start to enforce, I know that that's not what I agree with or play with. I might, because of severe results to not obeying, I may act as though I'm obeying, but inside me they can't take away what I really believe and feel and where I'm going. So, you know, I'm quite happy to be flexible enough to do whatever is necessary to survive. but I'll still know exactly who I am and where I'm going and what I want. And I will keep that focus, and the universal law of attraction will help me manifest it.
Which is fabulous. That's really the way to do it, in my opinion, as well. But Jeffrey's question does bring up something useful. It kind of harkens back to what we were talking about toward the beginning of this discussion, when we were making reference to the major religions of the world and how they had influenced your life and mine, and how you have the experience of interacting with people from various religions and help them understand their own religion better and so forth. One of the key elements, I think, that can be found in every religion, I don't think there are any exceptions. There might be one someplace, just not one I can think of. Religions are about imparting some version of morality. And morality is an interesting concept. And the reason I say it's an interesting concept is in my definition, now this is my way of understanding morality. Morality is about what it is that other people should be doing. It's almost never about what I myself should be doing. It's rather what everybody else should be doing. And the person who is a moralist, a moralistic type person, in my view, and I can say this from years of experience, is somebody who has basically built a very effective box around themselves. They have limited their experience in amazing ways, and they have managed, and I can say this from direct experience because I did this for many years, they have made it very difficult to enjoy their own lives because their entire lives now get wrapped up in how is everybody else doing in terms of meeting the moral objectives that I've laid out for them. And having to deal with the fact that, oh my God, they're all independent thinkers. What the hell am I going to do? They're not following my moral precepts. What's wrong with them? Maybe I should start guilting them some more. You know, maybe I should start throwing some guilt out. That'll make me feel better, right? Except it never does.
So you know what happens when they start doing that, when they start belting out their level of punishment and control and manipulation to get people to agree with theirs? They scatter their energies far and wide futless attempt, and it makes them horrible, bitter, tired, annoyed, frustrated, angry individuals. And there's a lot of examples of those around the planet. And, you know, you start seeing, as soon as you see one of those individuals and you speak to them for a while, you start seeing how they're trying to control situations and events and people and beliefs outside themselves. And it really is draining. It takes your energy and absolutely eviscerates it and annihilates it. And then you land up with this puff of energy and self-confidence and esteem and power that, you know, you try and wield. And of course, it's not very effective or powerful. And eventually you decide and you are forced in a way to turn inside again and look inside and stop controlling others and letting go and letting God and all the rest of it.
Unless you're really determined. If you're determined, then you're just going to continue to make life as miserable as possible for yourself and others while you hang on for dear life to that power that you are building for yourself with your moral, you know, superiority or whatever it might be.
It eventually, you know, the law of attraction is just going to make that bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and you're going to get tighter and tighter and tighter and weaker and weaker and weaker.
There's a reason why such people die off young. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Yeah, I was fascinated to know what the average age of a medical doctor in America was, their death age was something like 53.
Is it really? Wow. Yeah.
Because there's this book that was written by a doctor. He was first a vet, and he said, the thing I learned between a doctor and a vet is the animals couldn't tell him what was wrong with them.
Yes.
So you go to a human and they tell you what's wrong with them. So, you know, it's easy to fix, but he had to learn how to see what was wrong with somebody and not just hear what was wrong with them.
Right.
So,
all five of the senses.
He titled the book very, very aptly. He said, Dead Doctors Don't Lie.
Ooh, yeah, that's to the point.
The average age of a doctor's death is 53 in America, so dead doctors don't lie. They must be telling the truth, hey?
There's something weird about that logic, but I won't go there.
But yeah, you know, it's just really pointing out that these people that are supposed to be healing you are not managing to maintain their own. They're not a product of the product, you know?
I've told this story before, but it reminds me of the story of the guy who was, I think it was told by Sean Aker, who's one of the positive psychology guys. And he says he had a conversation with a sleep researcher, and the sleep researcher had just given a talk that Sean had listened to about the importance of getting a full night's sleep and about treating yourself right in order to get, you know, optimum health and so forth. And Sean remarked to him that he looked like he was in desperate need of a night's sleep. And the sleep researcher said, hey, I'm a sleep researcher. I stay up all night watching somebody sleep. What do you expect?
I expect you to sleep during the day then.
Yeah. But there's another example of it. I mean, and I'm sure that the sleep researcher wasn't really trying to, you know, impose a morality on somebody else. He just found another way to shorten his own life. But I guess that proves there are many ways to do it.
The thing I've come to understand about sleep, Walt, is that as you become more aligned, you need less sleep. Because the reason you need sleep is to stop the negative thoughts for a while. Because as Abram says, it pauses your thoughts. pauses your vibration. So when you go to sleep, it's pausing it. So that's why it's always very good to go to sleep in a high vibration. You want to go to sleep when you're thinking about things you love and you're happy about, etc. because then you will sleep through the night at that vibration and you'll wake up at that vibration, which is a higher one than maybe you'd normally wake up on. So what you do before you go to sleep does have quite an impact on, you know, what side of the bed you're going to get out of in the morning.
That's an interesting point, because I have to say, in the past when I've heard them say that, I've just thought in terms of the vibration ceasing, but the vibration doesn't actually cease. It just stops changing.
Absolutely. It doesn't cease, right. But it stays at the same vibration. Sorry. Yes. That's right. A more accurate way of putting it. And also, because it's frozen, kind of, not ceased, it's kind of staying at the same vibration, you don't have negative thoughts during that period. You know, there's a short period of REM when you're dreaming, where you're not in that state, and that's before you get into that state, or when you're coming out of it on the other side. So you can dream at either side of that scale, but it's not a very long period. The most of it is when the thoughts are kept at the same vibration and you're not thinking.
I saw a Facebook post just a day or two ago, in which this young woman was sharing an experience that she'd been having and her husband's reaction to it. And I thought that both his reaction was interesting and some of the readers who commented on the post, their reactions were interesting. Because what she was saying is she has the very odd experience of having lots of dreams where she's laughing and feeling good and just giggling. And her husband thought that was creepy, and some of the other people commenting thought that was creepy. And I thought to myself, I think it's pretty cool. She's exactly on the way to stay in a high vibe place during sleep. I mean, how bad is that?
So that implies that the people that are saying it's creepy means that they have a lot of dreams that are based on horror stories.
Yeah, well, sure. It's true.
And, you know, if you want to know what depression is, or rage or anger or frustration or any negative emotion, they are horror stories that you're telling yourself.
Good point. That's exactly what they are.
That's exactly what they are. So, yeah. You know, you start realizing that you are creating these horror stories for yourself, and, you know, nobody's watching them and you're not getting paid. You know, it's not a good deal.
You're not getting paid. Well, you're getting paid, just not the way you had intended to be paid. But Jeffrey had a follow-up to his comment from before. I thought I'd bring that one in. He had raised the question, since good and bad are relative, isn't everything we do subject to how it is judged by others? He followed up by saying, not necessarily you as good or bad, but our actions and words in any given moment as good or bad. So he was trying to qualify that. What do you think of that?
If it's a bad thing that I do, I learn from it, I move on. And it'll be me that's judging it bad. I'm not going to let society do that. So the power that Abraham Hicks gave me was this concept that negative emotion is there as an expansion tool. And that's not just a story. It's not just a sweet fairy tale I like telling people. I completely, absolutely, utterly agree with the philosophy, live it and believe it. So, you know, when I feel negative emotion, I'm getting excited. Oh, this is a lesson. I'm going to expand from this. What's going to happen? Well, how can I expand from this? This is the excitement I get from negativity.
Definitely an advanced perspective.
And, you know, if somebody else is judging me for it, it's their problem. I'm saying I'm excited about what I've just learned. So, you know, perspective, use it or lose it, you know, and I've really got that perspective, that negativity and negative people around me are there as my teachers, and they're there to help me expand. So bring them on, come to me, you know, help me.
And,
let me grow.
And like you pointed out, you're the one who's judging whether it's good or bad.
Yes.
And that's where I like to turn it on its head and say, I don't really want to judge my actions as good or bad, because I can be really rough on myself when I do that. I just judge it in terms of, do I prefer it or don't I prefer it? Do I like it or don't I like it?
You can soften it all you want. That's fine.
And that's what I do. I like softening.
That's fine.
I like softening it because I feel so much better when I soften it. So
then that's exactly what is right for you. For me, I'm so comfortable with thinking of it as bad because I don't really think of it as bad that it's very comfortable to use the word bad for me. You know,
there's a whole society of global masochists who are saying he's one of us, I think.
I love it. You know, what I would recommend people do is, you know, start making love stories in your mind, you know, making different movies. Yeah. Maybe it's just a documentary on something, or, you know, make different movies, something that, you know, there's so many different genres out there that are more positive. Just find, make a love story, just make it up in your mind. Doesn't matter if it comes real or not, just make a love story.
And I think one of the greatest strengths of that philosophy, if you will, or that way of being or perspective or however you want to phrase it, is that when we do that, we are actively going to the mental gym and exercising our ability to create. We're reminding ourselves moment to moment, I can create. And here's my proof. I just created this new thing in my mind. I created this new story. I created this new scene. I created this new series of events. And I did it all in my own imagination. And every time we do that, we get better at it. How cool is that?
Us humans have two faculties, continuing exactly where you're talking about there, Walt, is we have memory and we have imagination.
Mm.
They are the two most powerful tools a human has, and they are the two tools that destroy humanity, that bring them into negativity. You know, oh, I'm wondering if I got enough money to pay the next bill. Your imagination is destroying you. Or, oh, they did that to me in the past, and that harms you. I'll never forgive them for that. So your memory and your imagination, the two most powerful tools, man hasn't taken out the manual on humans and said, okay, these are the two most powerful tools. They can either destroy you like a knife, or they can help heal and cut and prepare and et cetera. It's, you know, how do you want your intellect? Do you want it blunt or do you want it sharp?
Very nice. I like that nice metaphor. That was good. Now, Jeffrey's got a follow-up, so we got to follow up on his question here. He says, do we have a responsibility to others to do as much good as possible or to try to smooth over rough spots when we have done something considered bad? My definition of bad, he says, is that it harms myself or someone else.
Okay, so if I'm rude to you, Walt, if I go, so Walt, please, I'm so sorry I was rude to you and I really feel so terrible about it. And please forgive me, Walt, please. How does that, what emotion am I putting out when I'm saying that?
Well, you're putting out two emotions. One's humor and the other one is not a real happy.
I wasn't supposed to come across, Walt. So what I'm trying to point out, Jeff, is that action of trying to get somebody else to accept your apology is not particularly useful because you're now focusing on what you don't want and you're amplifying, or the law of attraction is amplifying it. So what is the greatest gift you can give anybody is what I always say. And Walt knows the answer.
I'm waiting. I can hardly wait to see what way you're going to phrase it this time.
Your own happiness.
Mm.
So I did something to a parent recently that I didn't recognize her or her child. I could have, the next time I bumped into them, felt very bad about it. But instead, I remembered their names and their faces. And I greeted them, and I was very happy, and I chatted, and I was all jovial. Now, I could have said, please forgive me for not remembering your name last time, et cetera, et cetera. And I feel so bad about it. But I don't do any of that stuff anymore. It's just not part of my existence anymore.
Which is probably just
I've learned what I don't want. I learned what I don't want. I'm now focused on what I do want, remembering their names and their faces. And I go there with the upgraded version of Louis and present it. And that's it. Game over.
Which is probably just as well, because if you'd actually said that to her, she would have said, I didn't realize that you didn't know my name.
That could easily have happened too. Yes, very easily have happened.
So you just wasted all that negative energy talking about that stuff.
That's when your imagination is cutting you up into ribbons.
Oh my goodness, yes. Yeah, that is actually a great example of how we are really good at tearing ourselves apart if we want to, just ripping into ourselves, criticizing ourselves to death.
You're literally cutting the clothes off your body if you want a visual representation of what's happening. You're cutting and lacerating into yourself, and it's really of no value. It's not of value to them or you or the world or anybody.
Well, it does have one value. You do that often enough, you say, you know what? I really don't like that.
Yes. You're so good at finding the positive in everything, Walt.
I'm working on it. I'm getting really good at it. I'm practicing and practicing and practicing. Okay, so Jeffrey followed up. He says, what if it was an actual heartfelt apology? Sometimes we regret our actions or words, and making amends would make us and the others feel better.
So Jeff, I completely agree with you. If I was saying to Walt, you know, Walt, I really wish I'd said it like this. And, you know, in the future, I'm going to do it that way. And, you know, that's my way of apologizing, Walt, if you didn't realize it, you know, and I really feel good about it. And I hope you feel good about it too. And if you don't, that's your problem. But, but yes, a heartfelt one would be one that does not make you feel any negative emotion when you're saying it. Can you get that? Can you really see that? You're not feeling any negative emotion when you are saying it.
It ties into an idea that I've talked about with other co-hosts, and that is the idea of what forgiveness is all about. We tend to mistake the idea that forgiveness is about helping the other person, but forgiveness is about ourselves letting go. It's us letting go of this thing that we've been hanging on to, that we, you know, merged together from a variety of threads in our mind, and we created this huge thing that the other person said, huh, I didn't even know you were mad at me. Forgiveness is literally about letting go of that stuff. Mm. Just saying, okay, I've put together this thing I didn't really like a whole lot, and I wish I had, but, you know, I forgive. It's okay. No biggie.
You know, well, there's an interesting example here. One of my siblings said to me, my dad said something horrible to me, and, you know, I've never forgotten it and all the rest of it. And I said, you know what? He said similar things to me, but, you know, I just focused on all the things he did right, and I don't care about that one thing.
You know? Yes.
I'm just, you know, and I loved him to bits, and I, you know, he was the greatest, you know, dad a man could ever have, or boy. and did he make mistakes? Did he do things wrong? I said to my daughter, when you grow older and you dislike me, or you become a teenager and you got all these problems with me, you know, I'm just going to laugh at you. And I'm going to say, focus on all the things you did like about me and carry on with your life.
That's a great way to summarize the whole thing. You just took the whole show and summarized it in one really good phrase. That was excellent. I do want to take a moment before we completely run out of time to remind people, first of all, if you want to be part of the Rampage of Gratitude video that we're doing for Thursday, go to loatoday.net/gratitude, and you can use your phone to record the things you're grateful for as we approach the Thanksgiving holiday season. And also take advantage and, take a moment, if you haven't already done it, to download the LOA Today app and do like Deborah did. And, you know, she sent us this long piece that we use here on the show. You can ask questions, you can share insights, do what you want, but that's one of the reasons we have the app, is so that you can use that form for asking a question. So please do so. So, okay. Well, I think we did this one pretty well, Louis. We've got another one coming up next week that's going to be a lot of fun, the vaccines question. But I would say for the moment, we have done our job. So thank you very much.
Have a good or bad day.
Have a good or bad day. That's true. So thank you very much. Thank you to Jeffrey and our other live streamers. I saw Nasha was in there. Hi there, Nasha. And thank you especially to our podcast listeners as well. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Carpe diem. Bye.